Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
It does tend to get quite, well, physically graphic. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's not, luckily, well, not luckily, but like, there's not, I mean, it's not raunchy.
I'm Beth Murray, and this is One Torn Every Minute, the podcast where we talk about giving birth. Today, I'm joined by the splendid comedian and comedy writer, Athena Kublenu. Welcome, Athena, to my birthing centre.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. I'm very excited because I have a sense that you have a story here, but we'll come to that in good time. Can we probe your uterus a little? Firstly summarising how many times you have borne a child.
Can I say one and a half? Simply because I'm growing one now.
I'm so pleased. And I'm pleased. I'm obviously pleased for you, but I'm mainly pleased for me because this is the first in a delicate condition One Torn Every Minute I've
in
done.
In a family way.
Yes.
Yeah, in my... Yeah, and I'm well up the duff. I'm like 6 months in, so that's why I'm like I'm normally quite private about stuff. So are people who didn't know I was pregnant until they met my daughter, because I'm quite a private person. So I'm well up. That question was like, I feel like I should probably answer that. Honestly,
wow,
it's one and a half. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering if I should hold back a bit, but I'm not going to. We'll just see
this. Don't hold back. I'm very I'm tough for boots.
Okay, let's go for it then. So what I usually do is I ask you to choose your favourite child, by which I mean your favourite birth, but we don't know what that's going to be yet, so we're just going to go for the first.
I already know it'll be the second one. Do you know why?
Why?
Because hopefully we'll be in a similar lockdown and I'll be able to do it on my own.
Really?
Because the first one, it was a cast of thousands, and they all needed to fuck off. Anyway, they all needed to go away. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this one, it'll just be me and a midwife and a bucket or whatever it is they use. I don't know.
Are you going to have like a pool in your living room?
Listen, no, it'll be hospital birth all the way. I did all that birth centre stuff. You actually said birthing centre earlier on, it was totally triggering. We'll go into that.
So first time round, you were in a birthing centre.
Well, that was the plan, but I should never have been there. The decision to put me there was the start of a very long 48 hours, I would say.
Okay,
yes.
Right. I'm already sensing some really some really juicy storylines here. So I'm just going to take you back. So when are we talking? When were you pregnant last time?
So I gave birth in October 2018. An important part of this story is that I was very late. I was about 20 days late.
20 days?
Yeah. So we probably, maybe 18, 20, but I waited 2 weeks, and then there was a further, like, 3 or 4 days of just getting fitted in. You know, that was when I went to the midwife after 2 weeks, you know, they scheduled in the induction and they scheduled it in for, so I was due on a Wednesday and I had my induction on a Sunday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that's 18 days late. I was 18 days late. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I suppose first babies are often late, but not usually that late, and they don't usually let you go that long. They start fussing before then.
Well, I heard a really interesting fact about the science behind overdue births, and that apparently the information we use is based on data from like the 50s from like a really small sample size. Like my experience is that it was the right thing to do to wait. I mean, you have to get induced eventually, you're not elephants, but it was, and it was in turn like I think really beneficial, because babies come out too early anyway. That's the science, right? They're born far too soon, but if they were born later, women wouldn't survive the childbirth. So that's why when they come out, they're not very fun. They're just sort of
like
they
aliens.
Can't see. Yeah, you know, they can't do anything. So I think an extra couple of weeks. I mean, I always say I didn't give birth to a newborn. I gave birth to a baby. She come out like fully cooked, overcooked, in fact.
Wow. Well, I had an undercooked baby. So it can be a good thing to wait that long. It sounds like you were having quite a good pregnancy. Did you feel healthy and fit and happy?
Yes. I mean, again, it's really easy to stray into the territory of body shaming and all that kind of really problematic stuff. But, you know, up until my pregnancy, I was like one of those really boring people that was like measuring porridge and running and doing all that stupid stuff, riding my bike to get to places before COVID, guys. I'm not a COVID bike rider. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm hardcore. I was doing it when there was no cycle lanes. So running, like getting into fights with buses and stuff. So what I mean is I feel like that massively benefited me during my pregnancy, because it's just, it was like, I know it sounds really weird, and a lot of it is luck, because not everybody is lucky enough to have a kind of a trouble-free pregnancy. But other than the sickness and the nausea, I was physically like quite fit with it. So it just was, I didn't feel like I ran up until 6 months. I was doing 5K runs a couple of days a week.
That's pretty impressive.
I was like 6 months pregnant. and then one day I ran to the top of my street and I was just, I couldn't breathe. I was like, and that was my body going, yeah, keep it social.
You've done a bit too much.
Yeah, like shit. And after that, I just sort of went swimming and used my exercise bands. I didn't really do much after that. But I honestly believe that really benefited me. And I did the Edinburgh Festival, like totally knocked up. I was like 8 months pregnant by the end of it.
Bloody hell.
Because a lot of people forget that pregnancy isn't a medical condition. You know, when you give birth, you don't need a doctor, for example. So if you are lucky enough to not have anything transpire out from your pregnancy, you know, like high blood pressure, or you know, you can get diabetes, there's all these things that can happen, and luckily I managed to, whatever, I don't know how I get touched by any of those things. So
I really wanted a doctor. I mean, I was fine, but I do like a doctor. Just to dip into this pregnancy that's now, I'm so excited about that. Is that the same, or is it a different feeling?
It's the same in the sense that I touch wood, you know, I'm in good health. But it's the worst feeling of nausea and tiredness. And that's how I knew it was a boy. I was like, this is a boy in me.
And that for a fact, or you're just convinced?
I went and I was like, I know it's a boy, because I've literally felt terrible for the last 3 or 4 months. Like I was, and it compared to my last pregnancy, not so much that boys are trouble. Boys are lovely. If they weren't lovely, I wouldn't be pregnant. But it was more the fact that it was so different in my brain. I was like, this is a different baby. Because I was sick and I was nauseous with the first one, but this was another kind of illness. And at one point, I couldn't taste anything, couldn't smell anything. I thought it was corona.
I was going to say, that sounds like COVID.
It was the baby. It was the child. I know it was. Mm. And I still, even, you know, I'm 6 months in and I still have this, still have the nausea. I still have the tiredness. So now I had a cold. So this is not my proper voice. I've had a cold since
taken away your voice. That's the patriarchy.
Yeah, I'm a little bit Ed Miliband at the moment. but again, it's more that, you know, there's like pregnancy symptoms and then there's like pregnancy illness, and the symptoms it's like surfing, you just got to ride them, you know, and I've got used to it now. Oh, and I've got terrible wind. Oh my gosh.
Really?
Yeah. It's really, I find it hilarious, but obviously I live with someone who doesn't think it's funny, but farts are always funny.
And also you're having a boy, then you've got to get used to farting being funny.
Look, we all know boys are smelly. We know this. Okay. No, if you have, you know, even if you are a boy or a man, you know that boys are slightly smellier than girls. It's just how it is. You ever go into, like, I have two brothers and I think about their bedrooms and I just think about their socks and the food they would leave under their beds and, oh God. But my one, trust me now, this is like, you know, all my energies. I don't care if he gets no GCSEs, if his room is tidy and he doesn't have that boy smell.
He can fail at all.
Yeah, exactly. Just smell nice, man. No, I mean, it makes you think, babies do make you think about gender and all this stuff. And I'll try to project what my beliefs about gender and all that bullshit onto them, but they will absorb all this stuff from the world. And he will eventually say, hold on a minute, I can wear socks 4 days in a row. And it won't be me. That's the media. What can I do?
As the mother of boys, I can sympathise with that. But let's take you back to your lovely smelling girl. So you were 18 days overdue.
Yes.
And then you went to hospital so that you could be induced?
Yes, so I could be induced, yeah. So, and if anyone doesn't know what that is, basically you take a pill, which is just a very concentrate. Oh, no, you don't take it. No, they insert a high-dose pill, which has, I think it's oxytocin.
Yeah.
But so when I say you take it, you don't take it for your mouth, take it somewhere else. And
I would have thought it was being an injection. So you're telling me it's a suppository.
It's a suppository. Oh, that's the word. I was trying to find another way to say they stick it up your muff. A suppository.
No, hang on. No, I'm getting the sense that I'm wrong. Anyway, by suppository, I meant they stick it up your ass.
No,
that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I
can't believe this is the second series of suggesting that a baby comes out your ass.
This is the best podcast ever.
Sorry.
They stick it up there because that's where it's
coming out. Yeah, that makes sense. Good job I'm not a doctor. So they stick it up your vagina, which I'm still learning to say, and then it like kickstarts the whole thing.
It's supposed to, but my birth was the problem with it was that they called it non-progression. So my birth didn't progress. It's really important to realize up until the point of my induction, I had no contractions whatsoever. I didn't even have Branston Hicks contractions, and my bump was so high, I might have been carrying this child in my boobs. Like it was literally this child.
She hadn't dropped. She hadn't
descended at all. She was not about to come out. And interestingly enough, my daughter is quite stubborn, and I would suggest that. That's, you know, there's nothing I can change about that. That's really important. And then whilst, you know, when you get induced, you're supposed to go home and come back when your contractions start. However, I was at the time not with my partner, I was on my own, and I'm the only driver in my family. So I explained to them that if I go home, I won't be able to come back to the hospital really because I'd have to drive. So they let me stay in hospital. So it was just me and my mum in the hospital just waiting for contractions to start, and they just never came. They started to come, by the way, but then they never got quicker or more painful. Not for ages anyway. Like literally were there for like 13 or 14 hours. Then, but I got like, they gave me dinners, which were hideous, but...
So they didn't, because I was wondering if they would start doing nil by mouth in case that they had to like give you a cesarean.
No, they didn't do that. They were fully confident that they just had to give me whatever they gave me and that I would give birth. And that's the real issue. And that's where I think I could have maybe done something about it, but I couldn't bother it. But two things happened. I eventually went into what's it called like hard labor or the stage of labor, which is like, okay, this is labor, the baby's coming.
Oh, right. So transition. So there's a transitional phase, which is where you think you're going to die. And then it goes into the second stage. So you get early labor, active labor, transitional phase is where you think you're going to die. And then the second stage is where you start to push.
Okay, so I went into active labour.
Yeah.
And then they were like, great, what would those you measure you? So I'm sure you will know and your listeners will know that you're not supposed to really get your dilation measured regularly. You literally, because of the risk of infection. So they measured me and they were like, oh no, you're only like, literally, I was like 2 centimetres or whatever. It was ludicrous. Yeah. So they were like, now you've got to wait 4 hours. I was like, bloody hell, another 4 hours of me and my mum just sat in this ward thing. And then my brother shows up because I didn't want him there. My mum thought it'd be nice for him to be there. So that was...
Your brother?
Yeah. It's, I don't even know what to say other than
no at the business up. End.
No, he wasn't there. Like he obviously, you know, he was present in the hospital.
Oh, I see. Like... I thought you meant in the delivery room, and I'm like,
no,
really devoted.
At this point, I was literally in triage. Like, I wasn't in the birthing centre or anything because they only admit you in the birthing centre when you're in active labour.
Yeah.
And at that point, they had measured me in the ward or triage, whatever it was, and they were like, oh, you're not even properly dilated. But I was like, but I'm in active labour. They were like, yeah, but you're not dilated. Anyway, so I wait 4 hours after that and they measure me and they go, it's a miracle. You are now at the correct stage of dilation to go into the birthing center. And then they were like, oh, well, actually, we wouldn't normally put people this late into the birthing center, but you're like super fit and healthy. You know, you should be fine.
You can
so
take it.
There you, yeah. And I thought, and I think that was the real pivotal kind of decision, because that was a really weird thing to do, because I've since discussed my birth with people who were like, nobody has a birthing center birth or any kind of alternative birth if they're that late. Like, it's just not the done thing.
Do you think they did that because there was just the space and they thought it's quite useful to move you there?
The midwife, so this is an interesting thing. I knew the midwife because a few months or weeks or whatever prior, I'd gone for a run and fallen over.
Yeah.
So I went to maternity triage, which anyone knows is like an A&E specifically for pregnant people. And it wasn't like a big fall, but I went just to get a scan, everything. And I met the midwife and I'm there in my lycra. And she was like, plus, yeah, you're still running. And I was like, please don't tell my mum. and then when I saw her again, she recognized me. And I think that there was probably a bit of bias in her, to be honest. So she was like, oh, well, cool. There's Denise Lewis. She'll be fine. And I wasn't fine. I was 20 days late. I was, you know, I'd spent my whole Sunday in this place. This baby wasn't coming out. This baby was never going to come out in a birthing center, you know, I'd been given all the correct drugs. This baby was, and so I think it was just the, oh, you'll be fine. And at that point, I was what they call a geriatric mum. I was 30. I was the top end of 35 when I gave birth.
I love it when they do that. They just basically write that you're a doddery old crone.
I know, yeah. But, you know, I think the science is not quite right, but there is something to be said about a 36-year-old body giving birth and, you know, against a 24-year-old body.
Well, certainly for the first time. I guess if you were a second-time mum or a third-time mum, they'd be much more relaxed about it. But I think that's the sense.
It's all stretched out.
First time,
you
don't know what kind of birther you are. You know, you might be a kind of heave it out in two pushes, or you might be, like me, a canary down the mine. they need to be quite careful in finding that out.
Yeah, totally. So that was terrible. But anyway, at that point, we were like, finally, after all this waiting, we can finally go to the birthing centre. So I pack up all my stuff, you know, because I've got my bags with me, and it's just me and my mum, and then my brother's there. Reasons that we will never know, because he loves me, obviously. That's the reason. But still,
just as long as he didn't actually look, I'm cool with your brother being there.
There was a really funny point in the. I'm skipping forward a bit. I will come back. There's a really funny point when I'm in the birthing center and it's all gone wrong. Like, it's all gone to shit. And a midwife comes in, and at that point, I'd sent him away.
Yeah.
I was just like, just go away, you're just not helping. but obviously, hours and hours and hours have gone by, and for whatever reason, he came back, probably because my mum told him to come back. So my mum's a very nervous, anxiety-ridden person, which I had no idea about before. I only realised she's an anxious person now. And a midwife comes in, and she's like, oh, your brother's here, can he come in? And I just like go, no! Like, why would I want him in? You know, I'm walking around in my bikini top, and like high off of that drug that's supposed to be like medical heroin. I'm like, this is, it was all hotel. So anyway, we all go to the birthing center, and he waits outside, obviously. And my mum is just like, the biggest mistake I made with my birth is that I took it all a bit too much in my stride, because I was doing it on my own. I just thought, oh, okay, I'll just read about the options I've got. I'll just tick off the options I want on this list. I'll do my little birth plan, and my mum can come and just like spectate. And when she showed up, my mum hasn't given birth since 1981. And even when she did that, she had a very terrible pregnancy. She was in hospital for about 4 months with me and my twin brother. So all she knows about childbirth is really epidural, baby pops out. that's all she knows. So she walks into this room with like a pool, with some contraption that looks like a kind of guillotine, with a stool, with all this equipment. She's like, what is all this? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a natural birth in the pool. And she's like, okay. So I get into the pool and she sits herself in the corner and then she asks the midwife to make her a cup of tea. And that's when I was like, oh my God, this is not going to go. This is because I thought she would just naturally know, like, you know, what giving birth is about and what being a birthing partner was about. But I hadn't really understood that. Of course she wouldn't know.
No.
Because she never had one herself. She never needed one. And it's 2018.
It's
you know?
Different.
And when she was like ordering the midwife to get her tea, she was like, they're supposed to get your tea. And I was like, oh no, this is really bad. And what I don't want to do is make my mum come across as like, you know, like, oh, she can't believe she thought that. That's so ridiculous. Like, this is of her time. That's how she was treated in hospital. She's in the hospital for 4 months.
Yeah.
So that's how she was treated. So it didn't occur to her that that's not how things are done now. And obviously we are really holistic and we're really kind of back to basics almost with childbirth. That's not something, you know, in the 80s, you gave birth, they bleached your child and they gave you a bottle and they sent you on your way, you know? So, you know, there's no skin on skin contact, which probably explains Brexit actually. So it's, didn't have enough skin on skin. So it's, you know, that's it.
So maybe your brother would have been a better birthing partner in retrospect.
Don't say that. Don't say that out loud, because then he would turn up to the second one. But you're absolutely right in terms of what you're saying. Like, somebody younger who is a bit more open-minded. Again, not that my mum isn't open-minded. It's just her specific experience of giving birth. She's given birth to 3 kids, you know, didn't involve the kind of things that I wanted to involve. And so they were very alien to it. And obviously I'd gone through a process of learning. I'd gone to a couple of classes that the council put on. You know what I mean? I'd Googled some stuff.
But also, I'm not sure someone that close to you is the best placed person to watch you in massive amounts of pain and panic, because they feel it so acutely and they can panic too, that maybe, you know, maybe you should have someone who you just know vaguely. Somebody's a bit more practical and, you know, like a bit more detached from the process.
At the time, that wasn't the case. And I'll tell you why. Labour is very hard. And because it's so hard, she couldn't understand why I would put myself through it. So she wasn't, it wasn't like she
was
sympathetic.
Well, it's a fair point of view, really, isn't it?
It's a very fair point. She was like, why are you doing this? And she thought this sounded like breastfeeding. It's like, why are you doing this? You don't need to do it. You can just get a bottle, right? She was like, why are you going through labour? You know, so she watched me labour, obviously with sympathy, but also with this kind of, should have got an epidural. So it had that real mother-daughter thing of told you so, you know, like, I told you so.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast app. Apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter @FriendsWF.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So you were kind of giving birth, but way, way too late in this birthing pool?
Yeah, so I'm in this birthing pool, getting gas and air, and having to wait, by the point I'm in the pool, I'm in active labour, like properly, contractions every 2 minutes, you know, just like...
Do you know how dilated you were at that point?
Well, the answer is no, and I'll tell you why. Oh, I've mistold the story, excuse me. I've mistold the story, and I'll tell you why. I was 6 centimetres when they measured me first time round. I was 4 centimetres when they measured me second time round. That's how we knew I was measured incorrectly.
Right, so they were absolutely sure about the 4.
Yes, so they were really absolutely were. 4. And then people were like, you've gone backwards. That's a bit odd. And then we waited 4 hours and I was measured again and I was still 4 centimetres. They were like, okay, you haven't moved. And then I was measured 4 hours later and I was 6 centimetres. And they were like, this baby ain't coming now. Like, and that's when we were like 12 hours in the pool. I was like a raisin.
Yeah.
And at that point only took 12 hours labour to get my mum into gear. My mum was like,
how many cups of tea had she got by then?
Oh, goodness knows. And a really funny thing, as you will know, when you labour is really painful, but it's intermittent pain. It's like intervals. Yeah. So when you're not in contractions, you're kind of fine. So in between my contractions, I was like giving her snacks from my bag, giving her change to use the bloody tea machine, texting people. Like, I didn't know what to do. It was the most, one of the most surreal experiences of my life. But after that 12 hours, I couldn't do any more.
No. Particularly because it's so demoralizing not getting any further. I mean, if you'd got further, that would be all right.
That was the main thing. So then what I asked for was a shot of that drug that I swore I'd never take, which I forget the name of.
Is it pethidine?
That's the one,
pethidine. That's the one no one wants because it's supposed to go into the bloodstream of the baby.
There's a small chance that it will, but I would suggest, from my experience, don't take it. Because when the nurse gave it to me, and by that point, by the way, once you get it, you can't have a natural birth. That's the point at which you're going to, you know, you can't be in a birthing pool or hanging upside down from a bungee rope or however you want to do it. Like, once you've had that, that's a very big intervention. But I was like, why is it still painful? And the midwife was like, oh, it doesn't stop the pain, it just makes you feel sleepy. It's like, I'm fucking sleepy anyway. Maybe it's 12 hours. So it's not, I mean, in my experience, like any kind of drug that doesn't stop the pain and makes you feel sleepy, I just sort of think, well, bearing in mind I'm having contractions every minute and a half, like, that's sleeping.
It's not what you want your experience of heroin to be, really, is it?
Look, it absolutely was not. And say no to drugs. Before I was borderline, like, it must be okay. Nah.
So you've had the pethidine, which you subsequently regret. What did they do now? Are they sort of saying, right, you've got to go into an operating theatre or something?
Okay, so they said, right, now you have to wait another 4 hours. I was like, no, I'm not.
Why?
I can't do it.
And why?
Because if the reason I was given was, if you interfere too much, you run the risk of infection. And that's unfortunately exactly what happened. And I'm skipping forward again, but I begged and begged and begged. I said, please measure me. There's something wrong with this birth. I'm not progressing. There's no point me laboring here for 4 hours. You know, like, and at that point, I hadn't realized they measured me wrong initially, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought I'd just gone backwards. And it wasn't until afterwards it had been explained to me, because it's impossible to go backwards. But in my mind at that point, I'd gone backwards. So I begged and begged and begged. And then they finally agreed to measure me before the 4 hour limit. So I think, I can't remember how long I'd been under that particular drug, but it definitely wasn't 4 hours, because I was begging. I was just like, this isn't progressing.
We should also point out that when we say measure in this sort of very gentle way, as if they hold up a ruler to the vagina, which is what I thought they did. I mean, this is like somebody sticking their hand up and having a massive, incredibly painful rummage.
It's like Countryfile. You know, if you ever watch Countryfile, yes. And it's perfect and it's lambing or whatever, it's just like that. And they use their fingers to measure.
And so you're begging them to do that.
Well, you know, not for the first time. But Yeah, but I was, because I thought, I can't do this another 4 hours. And then when they measured me again, they could see that I clearly wasn't progressing. And they said, look, your options are to go to the labour ward, have an epidural, and we will look at your options on which I had your epidural. And I was like, okay. So it was really funny. So I'd gone into hospital thinking, I'd gone into, you know, my pregnancy thinking I'd have as natural a birth as possible. And I had every intervention under the sun, every intervention you can have.
So I had the way.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, can I tell you a funny epidural story?
Yes.
Okay, so by this point, I'm all drugged up. I've been labouring for hours and hours and hours and hours. Like I said, my mum was there, not being as useful as I thought she would, and that was my fault. My brother's there, who is, like, obviously my brother, but, like, that's annoying. When you're pregnant and you're giving birth, anything that's happening that you didn't want to happen is just the most infuriating thing.
Yes.
You know, it's just infuriation to the height and to the max of 1,000. And it's, you know, you almost overreact to things, and it's very frustrating. Like, message to anybody who is around a pregnant person who's giving birth, please just respect what they say, even if you don't agree with it, because, you know, it's just
hard.
Do it. It's hard enough as it is. Yeah. You know, you don't have to understand their reasoning, but that's their reasoning. But anyway, we go upstairs and I get admitted into the labour ward, and a doctor comes in, or an anaesthetist comes in to the epidural, and I'm like, you know, I'm all stressed, I'm high off of this stupid drug, I'm very tired and whatever, I'm scared at this point, so I'm terrified at this point, obviously. And then he says, right, and they explain to me what's going to happen, and I'm like, cool. And then he says, right, you're about to feel something. It's very important. Once you feel this, you do not move. It's so important that you do not move. It could be catastrophic. You do not move. I'm like, okay, I won't move. And then I feel like something on my back, like a nail scratching me. So I think, that wasn't that bad. And I instantly relax. And then I feel this thing stabbing into my back. And I go, ah, and jump. And everyone around me goes, ah. Because obviously, like, when that happens, that's like, you know, the needle can go a millimeter to left or right, up or down, and that's catastrophic. So I was like, and they were like, he was like, I told you not to move. And it's like, I didn't move, but I didn't, you know, you should have told me to expect a fucking injection. You know, he said, you're about to feel something unpleasant. And I thought, that wasn't that unpleasant. And I'm high as well, right?
They've got to explain things more clearly.
Fucking hell, man, it was so funny, but it was terrifying at that point. And in the end, it was, you know, obviously it was fine. As it happened afterwards, when I had to be admitted to hospital, which I'll get to, so I'm skipping forward again, but I met that the anaesthetist came round to ask for feedback. And I said, you have to be really clear, because in my mind, I was following your instructions. And, you know, that's why I didn't tense my body, or I didn't mentally prepare myself to be still when you injected me, because I thought what I was waiting for had already been done. You know, he took that on board, and I appreciate the fact that they did do that. But a terrifying moment in my life, probably the scariest moment of my life.
Yeah, I had the same thing, the exact same thing, where they say, you need to be really still now, because if you move, we could paralyze you. And even if you have a contraction, you need to stay still. And I mean, it just seems like the most impossible, terrifying moment.
It's terrifying, especially when you think, oh, I've done it now, cool. And then you get stabbed.
And you
haven't. It's like, oh, yeah. But, you know, it's not epidurals, I think. I mean, they do the job, but that moment is really unpleasant and very scary.
Did it do the job, though? Because I've had mixed reactions to epidurals from people I've spoken to.
Yes. So my understanding of epidurals is you can get good ones and bad ones.
Yeah.
So the best ones are when you are anaesthetized from the waist down, but you can still feel your contractions.
Yeah.
I couldn't feel any contractions. From that point on, I didn't feel any more contractions. I could see them happening. They link you up to a machine, so you can see like waveforms on this machine that tells you when you're contracting.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel nothing. I couldn't do anything.
Isn't that good?
No, because for some reason, I'll never know, rather than them saying, have a C-section, they were like, you know what, man, you're getting bit by bit, you're moving on. So let's try and push this baby out. But you can't push if you can't feel contractions.
No. But I thought they toned it down, or it wore off towards the end when you actually have to start pushing.
No. So what they did was they hooked me up to something where I could administer the drug myself.
Yeah.
I forget the time interval, but every so often I could just press a button. and released the drug to make sure it didn't wear off. I was never told to ease up on it, to feel the contractions. That wasn't advice I was given. Mm. In hindsight, that feels like good advice. But yeah, it does. But you know, and that's what happened. I was in this bed with this epidural, and I was being measured every 4 hours as per before. And when it got to 10 centimeters, I couldn't push, because when you're 10 centimeters dilated, you can obviously push the baby out.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do anything because I couldn't feel the contractions. I couldn't, you know, it was a very, that was humiliating, actually. It was really humiliating. I didn't like that because I couldn't do anything.
But they should have told you that you needed less drugs to push, so that they should have sort of weaned it down a bit. It feels weird that they didn't tell you.
It feels really weird, and I don't know why they didn't. I think maybe they said to me, the more you, I can't remember. I would assume they said the more you administer this drug, the less you feel, and they maybe expected me to put two and two together.
No, but no, it's got to be clear.
No one said, look, you have this, you're hooked up to, you've got an epidural. If you want to have some kind of a natural birth or a vaginal birth, you will have to ease up on the drugs for that to be possible. No one ever said that, and it never occurred to me.
Well, that far down, you're not really supposed to make rational decisions and, you know, really weigh up the balances. You just react instinctively, which is, I'd like to be in less pain, please.
Absolutely. And at that point, I don't really know what I expected. But anyway, I'd still be there giving birth now if they didn't finally make a decision to give me a C-section. That happened because my daughter's heart rate just started shooting up. So yeah. Even she'd had enough.
Yeah, she was like, surprised.
For goodness sake. So yeah, so I get measured to and I'm 10 centimeters dilated. So they say try push it out, and I try. I'm literally trying for forever, and they say, right, if it doesn't come out by this time, I'll give you a C-section. And it gets to that point. And baby, like nothing's happened. Like there's no, by this point, a midwife could feel my child's head,
yeah.
But it wasn't like any.
Didn't they talk about
condition.
Forceps or suction?
Not to my recollection. Oh yes, forceps they mentioned. But by that point, like I said, my daughter's heart rate started to go up.
Right.
So then they were like, oh, we'll give her a C-section. And it made me think maybe, I don't know if this is true or not, but it made me think that maybe it's bad for them to have C-sections. So they're trying to reduce how many they do. I don't know. But it seemed like they were doing everything in their power to not give me a C-section.
Yeah.
So I go into the theatre and, can I say, I was remarkably popular in this hospital. I think because I was quite sarcastic. so everyone was quite ecstatic. It was really weird. And when I was getting the C-section, when I say cast of thousands, I mean so many people in this room. I just couldn't believe how many people it took to pull a baby out. And they administered.
Did they all do that thing where they introduced themselves? I like that bit.
Yes, they did. And the sad thing is, I can't remember this. I don't know what you'd call him. I guess the surgeon's name, but the chief surgeon.
Yeah.
He was the friendliest guy, had the nicest face and the most fantastic bedside manner.
Yeah.
He was the first person I'd met that day who I just felt, oh my God, where have you been? I've been here for 2 days. He was just, I still see his face to this day. And he was really, he explained everything, and he just had really friendly eyes because you can't see the rest of them. But I remember his face from afterwards as well. And what happened was, so I mentioned before that there's a risk of infection when you get
so many hands, exactly,
and which makes total sense.
Yep.
It's amazing I made it this far in life, Beth, I'll tell you. before the hands. they don't tell you about this in school, but yeah, and what happened was once my daughter had been born, my temperature shot up, and they suspect that was because I got in it, like really shot up to the point where it was like if it had been Casualty or Holby City, that's the oh my God moment. Will she make it? It wasn't that bad, but it was still like, so then they give me a drug to send my temperature down. And that drug is just like, has hideous side effects. So I was like, had the like whole body shakes for about 12 hours after the C-section. I couldn't, I was just shaking. For whatever reason, like, I don't know why this happened, but I couldn't feel the left side of my body and I was terrified. I was like, I kept telling this really friendly guy, I can't feel my left arm, I can't feel my left leg, I can't feel anything. And he was like, you know, it's really trying to reassure me. But that was, and I suspect I did get an infection because that's, they had to address that. And because of that, they were afraid that I would have passed it on to my daughter. So I had to be admitted to hospital whilst we both got administered with antibiotics, which was the best thing ever, because after all that drama, it was just me and her for 4 days.
Oh, so, well, that's nice, because that's the horrible thing, isn't it? That you can go through this marathon of exhaustion and terror and panic and euphoria, and then they go, right, here's your baby, go and look after it.
Yeah.
And you just are in no fit state to deal with that kind of shock.
No, and it sounds weird, but it was a real blessing that I got those 4 days. So I got, you know, I'd gone through a quite traumatic time with my family, which obviously on reflection was, half of it was like me being in labour, so you see things in a very magnified way. Another half, like I said, like their inexperience with babies. Like, I should probably mention that I have a really small family in London. It's me and my brother, and my twin brother lives in Australia. So we don't have many babies and births and things like that. And, I should have mentioned this earlier, but my twin brother had a baby on the same day.
Hang on. Which brother was in the hospital hanging around?
I have an older brother who's in the hospital, but I've got a twin brother. He wasn't just there giving birth. He was there because he was getting his niece, and that's exciting. But I have a twin brother who lives in Australia.
And he was having a baby on the same day. My God.
Had a baby on the same day, yeah.
So
my mum was very... Yeah, so another, that was another thing which affected my mum's behaviour, because she was giving birth to two grandchildren that day.
She must have been freaking out.
Freaking out, distracted.
Make that woman a cup of tea.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, and freaking out, distracted, excited, nervous, you know, but not 100% in the room is really what I'm trying to say.
So it's good that after that you got a sort of peaceful chance to just regroup.
You know, with my family, they were very invested in the birth, but they weren't useful. My friend came with her laptop and just started working away in the corner. And we just chatted while she was working. And that what you said earlier about having somebody who wasn't that close to you.
Yeah, probably, not in that way. Yeah, that's what I meant. I didn't mean someone who's uninterested, but just someone who has a little bit of distance and perspective.
Precisely. And she was a lifesaver too. And I think I probably hurt both my brother and my mum with maybe my responses to them. So she was able to, because she knows my family, and she was probably able to kind of be a bit of a liaison.
Smooth it down a bit. Yes.
Do the diplomacy that I wasn't really up for. and that was great. So those going forwards, you know, I'm in the hospital and it was just me and this little girl. And we were just, it was great. You know, those 4 days, I'll always remember them. It was brilliant. We were just roaming around. And they give you these little cots with wheels on the bottom of them. I'm surprised you can't buy these cots. They're so great.
Yeah, they're really good, aren't they?
Oh, they're so good. I was just wheeling around, bumping into people and just like having natters and, you know, we're hanging out and texting. And and like I said, for some reason, everyone in the ward really liked me. So they put me in a really quiet part of the ward where I had to share one other mother. So it was almost like a private area, you know. And the doctor, because everyone says this about their kid, right? I know everyone says this, but like, because mine had been overcooked, she was super cute. Like big eyes, loads of hair.
I do not say that about my kid. He was so he was so undercooked. He did look like an alien.
Oh, bless. So it's the, like, yeah, another example, another reason to have them, because the photos are better.
How much did she weigh? Was she massive?
So 7'7" I've got here.
That's not huge.
It's not huge. Not for a baby that was that late.
That's kind of a good size, but just average. I thought you were going to be like she was 12 pounds or something.
No. She wasn't. No, she was a baby, you know. She just, she was, I would call that distinctly average, actually.
Yeah.
But she was super cute. And so the doctors would do their rounds and they'd be like, oh, what's her favourite one? How is she going? And they would argue over which one got to give her the injection. And they didn't want to give her an injection. I had a lot of fun bantering with the midwives and the doctors and like everyone who, overall, can I question the care that I received in the hospital? Like, yeah, definitely, 1,000,000,000%. But like, I have very fond memories of a lot of things, a lot of my interactions with the staff. But the coolest thing about those 4 days was just that control over my space.
You know, like, it's quite a luxury to have that.
Yeah, and I obviously I've never had a baby before, and I'm not around babies. I don't know how they work. So it was 4 days for me to like. It was like, it's like getting Lego, and you get the instructions, and you like, let me get to grips with this, you know. Let me know how. So by the time I came out of the hospital, I knew how to breastfeed, and how to change, and how to bathe. I just felt like really confident in my parenting. Which is really weird because it's 4 days, right?
And no, but that's a great start to get. But from a physical point of view, how were you recovering? Because you'd been through a hell of a lot.
I think C-sections are really challenging. I don't know if you have had one, but
no.
Yeah, they're very challenging things to recover from.
Harder to recover, I would have said, than a vaginal birth.
Yeah, unless you have, particularly brutal vaginal birth, they can happen. They're really hard to recover from. And I had all kinds of problems when I got home. I ripped my stitches. Literally just getting into bed, and I heard something's pop, and I thought, what's that? And I went about my business, and I looked around, and there was like a trail of blood following me from.
Jesus.
And when I say trail, I don't mean like drops. It was pouring out. Oh, it's just ludicrous. So yeah, the nature of the C-section wound is very problematic because it's just a deep cut, and then it's in a place that you cannot keep still. It's, you know, it's your core. So your wound is very vulnerable to split in. Obviously, little things that like you can't pick things up, you can't walk at any speed, you can't bend over, you can't drive. So I wouldn't say I had a challenge in recovery from it, but I would say it's challenging anyway. Regardless.
Yeah, because you're faced with this incredibly demanding 24-hour job that doesn't let you sleep.
So. Yeah, exactly. And another reason why the hospital was quite good, because I had a C-section, but I was in a place where I had a bed that could, you know, it was an electronic bed. It went up and down, and
yeah.
I had a cot that worked really well. And so you have all these things that give you lots of assistance with your mobility issues and your pain issues that you wouldn't probably have at home. So by the time I'd gotten home, I was in much better shape than I would have been had I just been discharged when you normally get discharged. It's actually ridiculously early in UK hospitals. You get discharged like so soon.
Five minutes after. You're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to do a poo before I could leave. That was my discharge. Discharge was go and do a poo.
they were very strict with my poos in hospital. They were like, I haven't had a poo yet. And I was like, but apparently, maybe for different reasons, because you get incredibly constipated after any kind of surgery.
I had both, it was because of my stitches, but also because of whatever drug they'd given me.
Oh, okay, yeah. But I remember thinking, what's the big deal, guys? They were just, did you poo today? And I was like, no, I didn't. I felt that was a failure. And eventually they gave me like some laxatives and stuff, which I still have, actually. I thought, I'm not throwing them away.
Is they're quite useful. You better check the use-by date, though, because I just discovered a load in our medicine cabinet.
Not in my house. We've got stuff that's 50 years old. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
It's all good, isn't it? It's going to do some good. What I usually do at this point in the show is ask you, you know, to go back and give yourself some advice. But actually, for the first time, you are able to give yourself some advice. What's your advice for yourself now?
To have really clear and frank conversations with my family, and the people close to me about what I would like to happen and why. And those conversations will be better now, having gone through it the first time round. So I'll be really clear about what I want. Because like I said, I hadn't appreciated that not only was having a baby a new thing for me, it was new for everyone around me.
Yes.
And I took a lot for granted. I just thought people would just automatically be the exact figures that I would have needed at the time that I needed them. And of course they wouldn't, because they have it like
human.
Yeah, everyone's human. And like I said, we're a small family. We don't have lots of babies. We don't have lots of this stuff. This stuff just never happens to us. It's new. And then for two to happen in one day on the other side of the world, it's a crazy story, man. So,
so weird.
I'm a laid back person who is very much, I take things in my stride, and not everyone is like that. And in childbirth, to take that for granted was definitely the wrong thing to do. But like I said, it's lockdown now, so I'll be on my own. It'll be great. I'll take an iPad and just film it and live stream it or something.
I'd just suggest you make your mum a big flask of tea to get her through it.
Yeah, she'll, it's a generational thing, I guess. She'll never really understand why I went through what I went through. In many ways, she was bloody right. She just had an epidural.
Yeah, I'm with her. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's, man, you think these babies just pop out and you hear these stories, but my gosh, they don't, you know. Like I said, she was clinging on. She wasn't going, no, she was squatting.
More times than not, it's a mess. And I think that, you know, advice of clear instructions is very good. But what I'm going to do with all these bits of advice that I get is I'm going to write them all down on pieces of paper. And I'm going to put them in a little glass bottle. And then I'm going to take it out to sea, find the deepest section of the Mariana Trench and chuck it in. Because in these scenarios, I think you're so right. Plans don't work and you've just got to go with the flow. Take it how it goes.
Yeah.
And we don't have advice on this show. We only have stories. But what we do have for the first time ever, which, as you know, we're really excited about, is we get to say good luck. And
thank you.
Wishing you the most smooth, zen, pain-free birth that you could possibly have.
Bless, you know something? You just want a baby at the end, you know? That's why.
Yeah, if you're healthy and you've got a healthy
that's
baby.
Why I never complained or said any, you know, I just, once it had been done, I was like, well, look, I've got this little monster now, so.
That said, wouldn't it be really nice if it was just, you know, a doddle?
Oh, God, like.
Karma-wise, you deserve it.
Oh, God, wouldn't that would be nice. And I hope that this what you've just said will make it so.
Oh, please, please. Thank you very much, Athena, for being such a fantastic guest and allowing us to delve so deeply into your birth canal. That was great.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. It's been therapeutic. I feel like you need to charge me now.
Good. Well, that can be arranged. And we'll send you on your way to your next birth. Thanks for listening to One Torn Every Minute. Hope we didn't put you off. See you next time.
GreatBigOwl.com.
All of television history is contained within the Box of Delights.
It was happening in front of us.
Incredible.
In our living rooms. It was amazing.
Guests pick their favourite television moment.
And tell us why they love it.
And is this the episode where Daisy's just been for the interview at the Woman's Magazine?
Flaps.
That's it, Flaps.
Yeah.
Named one of Radio Times' best podcasts of the year.
I don't understand people who don't see the joy in drawing the curtains, a mug of hot chocolate and something nice on TV. Like, what could be nicer than that?
Than having a snuggle.
Exactly.
Nostalgia in bite-sized chunks.
Box of Delights
from Great Big Owl.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.